Okay, we're live, Alexander.
Excellent. Well done. Oh, well.
Streamyard's nice. All right, how's everyone doing out there? Thank you for joining us for another live. We've been doing a lot of these lately. Let us know in the comments if you like the fact that we're doing more lives. Let us know how you feel about that. But we have some big breaking news. Just came in a couple of hours ago. They were in talks for about 6 hours, hours plus. Russian President Putin and Turkish President Erdogan. And they've come to an agreement. They've hammered out a deal with regards to Syria and Idlib. And they're going to calm down the tensions there from what both leaders said at a press conference. Their foreign secretaries stated at a press conference. Alexander, we did a video on this yesterday. We posted it. And the comments were really good. Of course, we had a lot of people from Turkey who were a bit upset with some of our analysis. But and of course, they say because you're Greek, you can't be objective. Yes, we are Greek, but we were objective and we nailed this story. You nailed this story specifically, Alexander. Bravo. You really, really, you seriously, you really got this one. Even down to the 6 kilometers that would be allowed for the Turkish military for Erdogan to operate, correct?
That's 6 kilometers. That's absolutely right. I mean, it was what was being floated. In fact, it's actually less, apparently, than he was offered initially. But let's just discuss what the mood music of today.
Hey, can I just say one more thing before you get started? Because I think you have a lot to say. Mm. I also want to say that you also mentioned in your analysis, and I mentioned it as well, that Erdogan, given the fact that the U.S. has no appetite because of an election cycle, an important election cycle to get involved in Syria. The EU is pretty much quiet. I mean, it's amazing how quiet Angela Merkel is on everything that's going on. It's absolutely breathtaking how quiet it is from Angela Merkel's side. It's really stunning. So Europe has also taken, you know, a bit of a hands-off approach with regards to the conflict between Russia, Syria, and Turkey, not with the migrants. That's a different story, which we can touch upon. But you have NATO, Europe, and the U.S. kind of saying, we don't want anything to do with this. We both said that Erdogan was being summoned to Moscow and he was looking for an off-ramp. Putin gave him that off-ramp, and he also gave Erdogan the breathing room to go back to Turkey and for domestic consumption, for domestic policies to come back and say, we got a deal. And so he saves face. That's all I wanted to say, just to give a broad picture as to what we said, how we analyzed it, because we were absolutely objective and we nailed this story, and you nailed this story, Alexander, and you really, really got this one right.
Well, I agree. First of all, I mean, you said warm things, but I mean, it's absolutely true. And it wasn't just myself. It was, the Duran collectively. And that is because we take a realistic appraisal. We look at the facts, and we analyze the facts and we pay attention to what people say. Now, let's start with the mood music, because this is a very interesting summit. As you correctly say, Putin summoned Erdogan to Moscow. He refused to go to Istanbul to meet with Erdogan. Erdogan wanted him to come to Istanbul. He wanted Merkel and Macron there. Merkel and Macron were prepared to come. Putin said, absolutely not, no. So Putin invites him to Moscow. They have this meeting. Now, what was Erdogan originally demanding a few weeks ago when the Syrian army began this offensive in Idlib? He was demanding that the Syrian army withdraw to the Sochi lines, the lines that back, in other words, to where it was before it began its offensive. So he wanted them to give up the cities of Sarakib, to surrender control of the M5 and M4 highways, to return to a jihadi control all of the areas in southern Idlib that they'd occupied. He wanted, in other words, to go back to where the whole situation was at the end of last year. Now, what has he actually achieved? What has happened? he threatened, let's remember this, he threatened to send the Turkish army to drive the Syrian army back to its starting lines if the Syrian army didn't withdraw at the end of February. Now, what has actually happened? We have a ceasefire. The Syrian army retains all its gains. It retains control of Sarakin. It retains control of the M5 highway. This is the highway that links the city of Aleppo in northwest Syria, Syria's biggest city, with central Syria, where the core of Syria. So it lifts the siege of Aleppo finally and conclusively. It regains control of these large territories of southern Idlib, which it has occupied. So the Idlib zone has been reduced by around half. And the Turkish military, what have they got? They've got this 6-kilometer buffer zone, which, note, they have to patrol alongside the Russian army. So the Russians are going to enter this buffer zone. And in this buffer zone, there is the M4 highway, the other big highway linking Aleppo with central Syria. And that's now going to be patrolled by the Russian military. It is impossible to see this as anything other than a major retreat by Erdogan compared with the situation that existed at the start of this year and compared with what he was demanding a few weeks ago. And how has this happened? Well, first of all, the Syrian army launched this offensive. Erdogan then did launch a counteroffensive. He deployed his drones, his artillery, his troops. They carried out various strikes against the Syrian army. The Syrian army did suffer some losses. The Russian Air Force then went back into operation. There have been lots of Turkish soldiers killed. Turkish drones, which were used to carry out strikes on Syrian military positions, have been shot down in large numbers, at least 10 in the last few days. And we have seen that the Turkish counterattack has been completely thrown back at every front. And the result is that Putin summons Erdogan to Moscow, refuses to go to Istanbul, and we have this agreement which in effect consolidates all the gains the Syrian army has made and extends the Russians further into Idlib province whilst giving Erdogan nothing more than this 6-kilometer buffer zone. So it's impossible to see this objectively as anything other than a victory, if you want to use those expressions, for the Syrians. They've made progress and they've lifted the siege of Aleppo. And to understand the dynamics of this, look at the pictures of what happens in Moscow. First of all, you have Erdogan comes to the Kremlin. He is received there by Putin. Putin, as always, is very gracious, very polite. He expresses condolences for the dead Turkish soldiers who were killed in Idlib province, even though everybody knows that those soldiers were in part killed because the Russian Air Force is operating in Idlib province and is, you know, involved in helping the Syrian army push the Turks back. At the same time, this meeting takes place. And where does it take place? In a room carefully chosen by the Russians with a very big statue in the background of Catherine the Great.
Who is noticed that.
Yeah, the Russian Empress, who, of course, launched the Russian armies and fleets against the Ottomans in the 18th century, repeatedly defeated the Ottomans in all kinds of battles, took from the Ottomans Crimea, defeated the Ottoman navy at the Great Battle of Chesme. It's the velvet glove, Putin's very soft words when he receives Erdogan, combined with the mailed fist. The mailed fist is, of course, the Russian military in Syria, and the reminder of that military is Catherine the Great's statue in this hall. And the result is that we have, after 6 hours of discussion, this agreement, which, let's be absolutely clear about it, is the agreement that Putin was determined to impose on Erdogan. Now, the other side of it is, the Russians have not gone out of their way to humiliate Erdogan. That has never been their objective. They want to incrementally move the situation forward. They don't want to humiliate Erdogan. They don't want to jeopardize his position in Turkey itself, because he's the person they deal with. They want to continue to maintain this strong relationship with Turkey that they've invested a great deal in over the last 3 years. So they've given him this off-ramp. They've given him the 6-kilometer buffer zone. They've given him the ceasefire that he was looking for. They were never, I think, planning, and nor were the Syrian military, I think, at any time planning, that the Syrian army would reoccupy the whole of Idlib. I don't think the Syrian army has those resources. We said that on previous videos. This is not a new thing. So they've given to Erdogan an off-ramp. They've got an agreement out of him. That agreement looks like it's a friendly agreement, but incrementally it advances Russian objectives in Syria. And I want to make this absolutely clear. Those objectives ultimately are the complete return of all Syrian territory to the Syrian government and the control of the Syrian government. No one should be under any illusions about that. There are, again, words about, the importance of a political settlement to the Syrian conflict. These were words that were expressed today. But the reality is, I think the Russians have concluded that Bashar al-Assad is the only game in town where Syria is concerned. They've long since accepted that there is no prospect of any kind of coalition government being set up in Syria. They intend to see the whole of Syria brought back under the control of the existing Syrian government, because that is the only way that stability can be brought back to Syria. And, the Russian bases and all that, which are now established in Syria, can be firmly secured. So it's not, the annihilation or humiliation of Erdogan. That's not what the Russians wanted. But it is clearly the Russians, once again, using a mix of force and diplomacy, the velvet glove and the mailed fist, to impose on Erdogan, to dictate to Erdogan a settlement, which, whilst it allows him to go back to Ankara with his reputation, if you like, intact, nonetheless advances further Russian objectives in Syria.
All right, Alexander, here's a question from Al-Mateen, and he asks, Assad now isn't able to bomb the civilians from now on, and Turkish soldiers literally died for providing this result. You should respect their efforts and sacrifice. And I give you this question because I want to, I guess, for lack of a better word, pushback from the Turkish side of viewing things. And I was looking at the comments the other day from the video we did the other day on this very subject, and a lot of the comments ran along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, of the fact that it was Turkey that was protecting the Sunnis in Syria from Assad's murdering of the Sunni civilians in Syria. Mm. And it was the refugees that were in Turkey, the 3.6 million refugees that were receiving safe harbor in Turkey because they were being persecuted by the Assad government. So what do you make of this question and of the narrative from the Turkish side of things?
Yes, I mean, this is the consistent narrative that has been coming out of Erdogan's government for some time now, which is that Turkey is protecting Sunni people in Syria. Now, two things to say about this. Firstly, Syria is an independent sovereign country, and it is not the role of Turkey or of anyone else to interfere in Syrian internal affairs. But putting that aside, a number of things I wanted to say. Firstly, everybody respects and is concerned about the lives of Turkish soldiers. Nobody wants to see young soldiers from Turkey or any other country dying in this sort of way. The second thing is, and it is a very important point, that I don't accept this picture of Assad and his government being a government that is intent on massacring Sunnis. This is, to my mind, a picture that has been promoted not just in Turkey, but in all sorts of other places, which I don't accept at all. Most of the Syrian army, most of the soldiers who serve in the Syrian army are Sunnis. This has been denied often, but it is true. Bashar al-Assad's wife is a Sunni. There are many Sunnis in the Syrian government, and the Sunni people, Sunnis, form the majority, the big majority, of the populations of Syria's major cities, Damascus and Aleppo, which have remained loyal to the Syrian government. The Syrian government is not a Sunni government. It is not an Alawite government, even though Bashar al-Assad himself is an Alawite. It has always sought to be an Arab nationalist, Syrian, all-inclusive government. That has always been its objective. What it is true to say is that the entirety of the opposition, not the political opposition, but the people who have fought the Syrian government are Sunnis, and some of them are not just Sunnis, the majority of them are extremely violent. I'm sorry to say this, but it's true. Takfiri, Al-Qaeda aligned, extremist Sunnis with very, very dangerous sectarian agendas. ISIS is, of course, a case in point. So is Al-Qaeda. And if you look at Idlib, the dominant political force in Idlib, the one which has been leading, if you like, the battle there against Syria's government, is Al-Qaeda through this latest group, HTS, as it calls itself. I use the initials. And of course, it is a sectarian, Sunni, terrorist group recognized as such by the United Nations and indeed by Turkey itself. Turkey entered into commitments under the Sochi Agreement of 2018, whereby it would separate this group from the rest of the opposition, and that it would open the two highways, the M4 and M5 highways, between central Syria and Aleppo. That never happened, and that is why there is a conflict in Idlib now. It is because the terrorist groups operate there. ISIS operated there. If you remember, just a few weeks ago, months ago, the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was killed in Idlib province by the US. And of course, Al-Qaeda is there. So that is why there is this battle there. And I don't accept that the Syrian military carries out indiscriminate bombings of Sunni people in Idlib, or that its objective is to carry out indiscriminate bombing of Sunni people in Idlib. Its objective is to bring this territory back under its control and to defeat these violent terrorist groups. And HDS is an internationally recognized terrorist group. And to defeat them. And that's what it's all about.
All right. So where do we go from here, Alexander? Does Erdogan abide by this new agreement? What happens if he doesn't? What's the outlook for Syria?
Well, we shall see. But I think that the imperative on him now is, if not to abide by it, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for him to abide by it. At least...
Why is it going to be difficult?
Well, because when you're dealing with groups like Al-Qaeda, I mean, Al-Qaeda is not part of this agreement. Al-Qaeda will never be part to any party to any agreement between Russia and Turkey, or between Turkey and Syria, or between any of these major parties, because, as I said before, it's a terrorist group, and it is very, very committed to fighting the Syrian government on, you know, in pursuit of its sectarian agenda, and indeed Russia. So it will not abide by this agreement in any shape or form.
Can I say something then, there, Alexander? Yeah. Why doesn't then Erdogan just realize that it's game over and it's time for him to cut Al-Qaeda loose?
Well, this is where I think this is now going
for
to start.
For him to take them out.
This is where it's going to start heading, because what we saw was an attempted Turkish military intervention in Idlib province. And that hasn't worked. Turkey has suffered heavy losses. Its forces have been pushed back. And what this episode has illustrated is two things. Firstly, Turkey cannot fight the Russian military in Syria. It doesn't have the kind of technological or military reach which enables it to do so. That's one thing. And secondly, as you said at the introduction of this program, it doesn't have support from the Western powers. The Pentagon has said it won't back it, and the Europeans has said the same. So Turkey is alone. It cannot fight the Russians in Idlib province. It cannot ultimately achieve whatever objective it has in Idlib province. Its only long-term solution is to pull out of Idlib province, allow the Syrians to sort out Al-Qaeda there, and to come to some kind of peace agreement with the Syrian government, which is what the Russians have been trying to persuade Erdogan to do. A few weeks ago, there was a meeting between the head of the Syrian and Turkish intelligence agencies in Moscow. The Russians have been trying to get the Syrians and the Turks to talk to each other again. And I think that's what needs to happen. It's going to be very difficult. But coming back to this agreement, it provides Erdogan with a breathing space. What has to happen is he's got to arrange for Al-Qaeda, I'm going to call it Al-Qaeda, it's to pull its fighters away from the M4 highway so that is now properly reopened. And remember, the Russians will be patrolling it. So it'd be very dangerous for Erdogan if anything happens to those Russian soldiers, because the Russians have shown that they will react very strongly if there are any attacks on their own people. So the Russians will be there. The Syrian military has taken control of the M5 highway and Sarakim. So what Erdogan now needs to do, he's been given time and space to negotiate this. He's got to work through this parallel political negotiation that's going on in Astana and elsewhere. He's got to try and find a way of coming to terms with the Syrian government so that Syria can regain control of its territory, both in Idlib province and elsewhere. It is in Turkey's interest that that happens.
What are the political stakes for Erdogan in Turkey from all this? What's the fallout?
Well, you've already mentioned that we've had, you know, various people from Turkey, very angry people, coming to our threads. They're very angry because they've been worked up to be. And he's got to find a way to manage the expectations and the anger that many of these people have. And that's going to be difficult. Erdogan, however, I'm going to say this, is a very skillful politician. And the Russians have given him an off-ramp. I think what he now needs to do is he needs to be practical and realistic. Never an easy thing for someone who is as proud
and unpredictable
as Erdogan. But, you know, it'd be very interesting to have been a fly on the wall and to have heard what Putin was saying to Erdogan. You know, they had, before the actual negotiations, there was a very lengthy meeting just between the two of them, with just the interpreters there. And I expect that, you know, when the cameras went away, Putin, you know, would have spoken to him in a very straightforward way, as Putin tends to do. So, you know, what Erdogan needs to do is to be realistic. He's got to understand that he simply can't win. Turkey cannot win by itself a battle against the Russians and the Syrians and the Iranians in Syria. It does have legitimate interests in Syria. Obviously, it doesn't want the Sunni people or any people in Syria to be massacred. And I am sure that the Russians don't want that either. And there can be negotiations through, as I said, there's political process. Also, the Turks don't want to see an autonomous Kurdish controlled region on their border, which would be an existential threat to Turkey. The Russians understand that, and they will work with the Turks to see that that doesn't happen. And the Syrian government, of course, doesn't want to see it happen either. So there is a deal to be done there. But ultimately, Erdogan has to prepare his public opinion, his public, to accept that sooner or later, he's going to have to come to terms with the government in Damascus, and that government will continue to be led by Bashar al-Assad, because there is no other game in town.
You mentioned Iran. Many people haven't spoken about Iran in all that's going on, but I know that Hezbollah now is very much a part of the conflict in Idlib. Can you touch upon that very quickly, Alexander?
Indeed. I mean, one of the things that happened was that, of course, after the very ill-starred and unsuccessful Turkish offensive, which did, however, cause some initial losses to the Syrian military, the Syrians redeployed some of their best troops to Idlib. But they also called in their friends. And so their friends were, of course, some of their friends were Hezbollah, which is this very well-organized and militarily effective Lebanese militia. And of course, it's well known that Hezbollah is very closely connected with Iran. And Iran is clearly a player, not perhaps very obviously or publicly, but it is clearly a player in Idlib province. It has been a consistent supporter of the Syrian government throughout this conflict. It provides Syria with oil. It provides the Syrian military with troops. It provides the Syrian military with intelligence, and it arranges for Shia militia groups to go to Syria and fight groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS there. So Iran is a major player, maybe not as visible as Russia, but it is certainly there in Syria and is there all the time, and is clearly a country, a force in Syria to be bargained with. Now, to take into account. Now, bear in mind, Erdogan has good relations with Iran. The Iranians backed Erdogan at the time of the 2016 coup. They were, in fact, the single most outspoken government in support of Erdogan at the time of the coup. Does Erdogan really want to jeopardize all these relationships with countries like Russia and Iran, which have been friendly to Turkey in recent years, in order to pursue a quest in Idlib, which is unachievable? He can achieve all of Turkey's vital interests: protection of the Sunni people, if that's a problem, the end of any threat of a semi-autonomous or semi-independent Kurdish fiefdom. He can achieve all of these objectives if he acts diplomatically and pragmatically. If he picks a fight with the Russians in Syria, he will lose. And the US and the Europeans have shown that they will not come to his rescue. And if he loses, he will jeopardize his own position in Turkey. And of course, coming back to this question from one of our viewers, lots of young Turkish people will be killed to no useful purpose.
Yeah. And going back now to the meeting and the outcome, now that we understand what's going on between Putin and Erdogan, what does Erdogan do with the standpoint of sending the migrants through to Greece and trying to get them into the EU? Does he reassess that strategy as well now? How do you plan that out?
I think he should. I mean, that has backfired on him. What he tried to do was he tried to use the movement of all these migrants into Europe in order to leverage support from the Europeans. And what has happened is that instead of making the Europeans come to his rescue, as I think he hoped it would, he has angered them. I mean, there have been some absolutely awful articles about him. I think I sent you some from newspapers like the Daily Telegraph, the Times, and the Financial Times, and that's in Britain, which isn't directly affected by this migrant flow. As I understand it, in Germany and France, people are furious there. And they're not just furious in Greece, which is on the front line. They are absolutely enraged there. So he has not gained leverage over the Europeans through this device. He has antagonized the Europeans. So he needs to stop this attempt to try and push migrants into Europe. He's got to come to terms with the Europeans by abiding with his agreement. But what he needs to do, because it's quite true that Turkey is bearing an enormous burden by holding on to these migrants, what he needs to do is to create conditions in Syria which will allow those people to go back. That means ending the war, accepting, as I said, a stable Syria within its borders. And it also means a peace deal with the Syrian government, which, as I said, will have to be led by Bashar al-Assad because there is no other game in town. And that also means bringing in the Europeans, getting them to accept this agreement so that the Europeans can be part of the reconstruction of Syria, which is the way to bring this whole migrant crisis to an end. Now, that requires great statesmanship on Erdogan's part. He's not always shown it, and that's putting it mildly. Maybe he isn't able to show it. But in his own interests and in Turkey's interests, and by the way, I want to take strong, I want to make it very clear, because I gather there's some people who said, you know, we're Greeks, we have some
kind of...
which we absolutely are. But, you know,
we call it objectively
and realistically. And, you know, on my part, certainly, there is no anti-Turkish animus at all. I want to make this very clear. And I'm sure I speak for Alex also. I mean, I've been to Turkey. I like Istanbul. This isn't, what we're pointing out are things Turkey needs to do in its own interests. It is in their interests in Turkey that there is a stable Syria. It is in our interests in Greece and in Cyprus and in everywhere in the region that there is a stable Syria, so that we all have peace. The Europeans don't get the migrants. There is no war in Syria. Sunni people there aren't endangered. Kurdish people there aren't endangered. And Syria has peaceful neighbors with whom it can build good, friendly relations, as not so long ago it had. So that is the line, that is the policy that Erdogan needs to follow, but in Turkey's interests and in the interests of all the people of the region.
Yeah, and I could tell you from the standpoint of being in Greece that I've never seen Greeks more united on a single issue than I've seen with these migrants being pushed towards the border.
That's
never
exactly
in my life. I don't think I've talked to one Greek person that said, let them through.
Absolutely.
Not one.
I haven't heard anybody say that either. I mean, I want to correct that. There is one person who I think has said this. I read an article by, surprise, surprise, Yanis Varoufakis and The Guardian, it is people like that who are very unrepresentative of a Greek opinion. I mean, extreme liberal element, who are totally not representative of what most Greek people think, who speak in this way.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, the migrant push is completely backfired.
Absolutely.
The solution, we've said it I think over 3+ videos that we've done on this subject, the solution for the Syrian migrants and the Syrian refugees, and I stress the word Syrian, is to rebuild Syria. You said it perfectly, Alexander. Assad is the only game in town. Every player from the United States to Saudi Arabia to Qatar to Israel to Turkey to all the countries that were trying to overthrow Assad, and there were many countries, and yes, Turkey was one of them, as was Saudi Arabia, as was Israel, as of course was the United States, and Obama and Kerry and Clinton. None of them are going to get off the hook as far as this show is concerned. They were all trying to raise an ISIS black flag over Damascus. The way to solve the Syrian refugee problem is to rebuild Syria so they can go home. Now, my question to you, Alexander, what happens with all the other refugees that Turkey is housing who are not from Syria?
No,
and they're from a plethora of other countries, and some of them are very, very nasty elements. You mentioned it, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, al-Nusra. What do you do with them?
Well, indeed, what do you do with them? Well, I mean, the one thing that Turkey needs to stop doing is supporting or assisting these people. I mean, that ought to be obvious. I mean, us getting involved and arming groups like Al-Qaeda is you know, holding a scorpion by the tail. Not so long ago, when ISIS was a major force in Syria, ISIS was launching terrorist attacks within Turkey, and lots of Turkish people were killed as a result of those terrorist attacks. Al-Qaeda is also capable of launching terrorist attacks. Turkish involvement and support for groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS has to end in Turkey's own interests. Now, there are, unfortunately, some very dangerous and radicalized groups of people within Turkey. They need to be isolated and they need to be dealt with in the way that all terrorists and potential terrorists have to be dealt with, through proper operation of law and enforcement agencies. And I think if Turkey asks for help, she will get it. Turkey will get it. I think nobody wants to see these people running amok and proving dangerous in the way that they have been.
Yeah, and we definitely do not want to see them pouring into Europe.
That's absolutely for damn sure.
And they won't get into Europe.
Absolutely not.
And if Greece lets them into Europe, and I'm going to say it now, if the Mitsotakis government lets them into Europe, the Mitsotakis government will collapse.
Absolutely.
They cannot let these elements in.
No question about it. So, by the way, with the Merkel government, if they went to Germany, and the Macron government, if they found the way to France, and every European government would find itself in severe crisis if they find themselves in this kind of situation. But as I said, there aren't, of course, I mean, there are people from all over, lots of places in Turkey. I mean, there's people from Afghanistan, there's people from Pakistan. All of these are war zones. And the wars in these places have to end. And I'm going to say something else. Of course, we're talking about what Turkey must do. European Union must sort out its own immigration and border policies. They are a disaster. They are an absolute disaster. And Turkey is entirely justified in feeling that it has had to pay the burden of the fact that the Europeans have run this utterly chaotic and completely disorganized border policies, which are attracting people who think they can come to Europe, are coming to Europe in many cases. I mean,
that's my question to you. That was my next question as we wrap up before we go to Super Chats. And Spartan Warrior Queen, thank you once again for moderating. You are the absolute best. Please get in touch with me. I want to thank you personally, Spartan Warrior Queen. Alexander, you read my mind. The person that is responsible for the migrant mess in Europe is silent. She's in hiding.
Yeah.
Pathetic, absolutely pathetic, Angela Merkel.
Well,
absolutely disgraceful. She created this entire mess. She went to Ankara. She paid off Erdogan. She told all the migrants to come right on into Europe. And now at the time of a major crisis going on in Syria, between Turkey, between Russia, migrants trying to pour into Greece, into Bulgaria, She is absolutely silent. What do you make of that? Wrapping up, Alexander.
Well, she's invisible, and I mean, it's a total abdication of leadership. Now, I mean, people who follow our programs know perfectly well what I think of Merkel. I think that she is somebody who's completely, completely discredited and is doing immense damage. I think she's doing damage, harm to Germany. She's doing harm to Europe. And as you correctly say, she is the person who bears responsibility for this mess. What she needs to do, since she cannot lead, this is what we've seen over this episode, since she cannot lead, she must go. I read an article, finally, in the Financial Times, by the way, which is up to now being, you know, constantly singing Merkel's praises, which finally accepted that she has to go, not over the specific crisis, by the way, but because of the situation in Germany itself. But she must go, and we have to have, from Europe's most powerful country, the EU's most powerful country, we have to have leadership, finally, on this issue. And that has to be realistic leadership. And by the way, that means that whoever emerges as chancellor in Germany, if in order to stabilize this whole situation, needs to speak to the country which is actually the most powerful country in Europe and which holds the key to stabilizing Syria, which is Russia. So all of these things are connected, but it's not rocket science. What you need is to put aside all these ideologies and all these absurd, you know, policies of regime change and all the rest, and do what must be done. Erdogan must start acting practically and realistically in Turkey's interests. Well, I say must, should perhaps, and it'll be a challenge for him to do that, but, you know, he at least is master of his own house in Turkey. And Europe, and Germany in particular, should start to lead effectively. And that means, I'm afraid, that the person who's shown that she is unable to lead, who is Angela Merkel, must go.
Until then, you have Kurz, Salvini, Orban. Yeah. Right. These people who have stepped up and kind of taken a leadership role, correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Of course, they and
I mean, Kurz really stepped up.
Absolutely, and to some extent, they can lead. I mean, you know, but what you need to have is a German chancellor, you know, who picks up the phone to Mitsotakis in Greece and says, "We're with you all the way." That's not what Merkel has done, and you know, goes along and says, you know, to Erdogan, picks up the phone to Erdogan and says to him, "This is completely unacceptable. We cannot have this. You know, this is, we can't have Europe being blackmailed in this fashion. It's not in your interests. It's not in our interests. And you're breaking your agreements with us by doing this thing." What does Merkel do instead? She agrees to meet with Erdogan in Istanbul with Macron in tow because Erdogan wants it. And it comes down to Putin to say no. That's not leadership. That's abdication.
Yeah, she's, geez. Yeah. I'm at a loss for words at how poorly she has wrecked Europe.
Yes.
How poorly she's wrecked Greece, yes, and Cyprus and Italy and Portugal and the UK. Well, and you name it. She's wrecked it all.
Yes. Yes. It's getting, dare I say it, I mean, you know, we are.
And she doesn't leave.
She doesn't leave. And as I said, this is a, you know, we have in Greece this word stasis, where everything is at a complete impasse and things are just deteriorating. And sorry to sort of bring up our language, but this is what we have. We have immobility as everything falls apart around her. And if she doesn't go soon, we will be very quickly past the point of no return. Now, you know, many people will want that, no doubt. I you know, many people want to see the European Union break up. I've no doubt about that. But, you know, if Germany doesn't want that to happen, or if they don't want that to happen in a chaotic way, they need to get rid of Merkel. It's obvious to me. I've been saying this for at least 3 years now.
All right. Let's get to the super chats, Alexander. Let's see here. Thank you to everyone who's joined us on this live stream. From Sparky, I have a feeling that there'll be a regime change in Turkey long before there'll be regime change in Syria.
Well, yes. I should say, there were rumors a few weeks ago that there was talk of a coup in Turkey. And I believe there was a study by the RAND Corporation in the United States that talked in those terms. The one thing I can say absolutely is that regime change in Syria is now definitely ruled out. The Russians won't let it happen. And I think that is something people need to understand and accept. There is not going to be regime change in Syria.
Right. From Scott Arbuckle, $20 super chat. Thank you, Scott. Mm-hmm. From Indianapolis, Indiana, keep producing live. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
We will.
We'll definitely try our best. Mm-hmm. DNA 250C super chat, €5. Thanks to the Hellenes and Austrians for truly defending the borders from the hordes of Asia. Thank you very much, DNA 250C, for that super chat as well. People... Greece can't absorb any more people.
No, impossible. It's 10 million people. It's a small country which has been through a massive economic crisis, which hasn't, for most people, has not abated. By the way, it's the one thing about Varoufakis's article, which I did agree with. He did say that, you know, the recovery people are talking about, the economic recovery people are talking about in Greece, has not reached the general population. And he is right. Greece cannot take any more.
Absolutely. From Russian Ballet, $100, Canadian 100. Thank you very much.
Wow, very much. Thank
awesome
you.
Awesome super chat. Mm. Much respect and gratitude for your work. Thank you, gentlemen. Mm. Thank you. From Saskats Fulup, HUF 2000. Thank you very much for that super chat. It's animated a GIF, Alexander, saying number one fan. Thank you very much for that as well.
Thank you indeed. You're very
from Brando Commando, $10 super chat. Hey guys, Turk living in Egypt. I predict if Assad raises the victory flag, refugees will not return to Syria because they are Sunni. They will stay in Turkey. Don't think Erdogan will abandon Idlib. Interesting thought. What do you make of that? They won't return to Syria. Because they're Sunni.
I think most people would prefer to return to their countries and live stable lives. Obviously, they will want protections. They will want, you know, guarantees that if they do go back to Syria, the war will end and there won't be any massacres there. But I come back to what I said. I don't believe that Bashar al-Assad, who is, I would reiterate again, married to a Sunni woman, has any interest in massacring Sunnis. I mean, the logic of that, I simply don't see. And why would people prefer to remain refugees in Turkey than return to their own country where they would be citizens? I mean, I don't see the logic of that either.
Okay, from Sparky, $2 super chat. Impulsive Erdogan makes Macron look like an adult.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I mean, Macron doesn't always look much like an adult to me. I was in France a few weeks ago, by the way, at the turn of the year, and I saw him giving his New Year's address at the. And I have to say, I mean, I struggle to believe that what I was looking at was a real person. It was most bizarre.
Right. From Mene, $5 super chat. I'm sorry you had to see that New Year's address.
No, absolutely. We're not. It was only 20 minutes, but it seemed interminable also, which is most bizarre.
Okay, from Nene, $5 super chat. Hello from Detroit. I'm an open-minded lefty, and I appreciate your well-reasoned analysis, even from Peter. Live shows are great. Keep it up. All right.
Thank you.
That super chat from Sparky. Erdogan banked on HRC and Huma Abedin when planning the new empire. Bolton, Pompeo, and Haspel kept his hope alive. He's forsaken by the US and EU/Merkel. There's some truth to that, but you also pointed out that he perhaps misread Russian diplomacy as well, Erdogan.
Yes, I think, by the way, that was an excellent analysis. I think that's exactly what happened, especially, in 2012 when Erdogan embraced the war, the regime change war against Syria. But he has found that, you know, all of these people who he thought would support him have basically abandoned him. But he did misread Russian diplomacy, and the Russians misread him. I would reiterate this. I think that the Russians, when they came to the Sochi Agreement, agreed with him, the Sochi Agreement, in September 2018, they thought that this was going to provide Erdogan with an off-ramp that eventually he would recognize that the war in Syria was lost, the regime change war was lost, and that he would gradually, step by step, agree to Idlib being reintegrated with Syria. By contrast, I think Erdogan thought that by reaching this agreement with him, the Russians were in effect ceding him Idlib province. So I think there was a mutual misunderstanding. And we saw it all come to a pitch this year when the Syrian army marched into Idlib, which Erdogan clearly had not expected. And when Erdogan reacted very aggressively to that in ways that the Russians had not expected. So the Russians and the and Erdogan have, over the last couple of weeks, had to learn an awful lot about each other, and have had to understand much better where the red lines are. But it's, let me reiterate again, it's the Russians who are drawing the red lines, not Erdogan, because they're in the stronger position.
Okay, from Valias, a $20 super chat. Thank you once again, Valias, for your super chat. We really appreciate it. You're great. Mr. XYZ, $4.99 super chat with an animated GIF saying, keep it up. Thank you very much, Mr. XYZ, for that super chat. Let's see, from James Parker, super chat. Alex, what do you think Turkey should do? So I guess this is in relation with what's going on in Syria and Idlib, but is there anything else you want to add as to what, I mean, you've outlined in detail what you think Erdogan should do.
He needs to go back. Yes, he needs to go back to the foreign policy he originally had, which was, you know, a good neighbor foreign policy.
I mean, he got along with Assad in the past.
And he got along very well with Assad. He got along with Iran. He went out of his way not to make enemies of people, but to make friends. And can I say everybody, because Turkey's a big country. It's a country with immense potential. Everybody wants to see a Turkey that is a friend. And what he's done instead is he's pursued this very grandiose foreign policy of trying, you know, to extend Turkish influence to Libya. But what are Turkey's actual interests in Libya? I can't see any. And again, he's getting involved with all sorts of dangerous people there. He's got himself involved in this war in Syria. He's had prickly relations with, you know, Iran now, over, you know, which wanted to be friends with him. He's put at risk his relations with Russia. He's got
with the US.
He needs to go back to doing what he used to do at one time, which is seek good relations with everybody. And if I may say, it was also Kemal Atatürk's policy, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. He used to talk about peace at home and peace abroad. And Turkey advanced considerably under that policy, which was the policy that Atatürk used to follow.
Okay, from Robert Carr, a £5 super chat. Thank you, Robert, for that super chat as well. We really appreciate it. And from Firapan 90, SEK 100, greetings from a fellow Greek. How big is the chance of Turkey actually declaring war with Greece? He's threatening Greece all the time and flying over Greek airspace multiple times each month.
I think if he does anything like that, it'll be the end of Erdogan. That's what I think. I mean, I think that the United States and Russia would, but especially the United States, with which Greece is now very tightly aligned, would react with complete hostility to any such move. I think Erdogan does have a sufficient grasp of reality and of the needs for his own survival not to go down those extreme paths. The problem, I don't think, is that he would declare war on Greece. It's that he will continue to chip away, and he'll send, you know, ships into Greek waters, try to sort of declare these impossibly grandiose, you know, maritime zones, boundaries, interfere in gas projects, all of those kind of things. So instead of war, I think the risk is constant tension, which always has the risk of flare-ups. So not all out war, but, you know, conceivably armed clashes. And that would not be good at all. And that would be bad for Turkey. Of course, it would be bad for Greece also. But Greece's friends, at this moment, Turkey doesn't have that many friends.
Okay, from Global Citizen, €5 super chat. Coronavirus is the pin that bursts the EU bubble. Getting rid of Merkel will only prolong the inevitable, the fall of the euro.
Well,
prolong the inevitable.
Well, indeed. Well, I have to say this. I mean, this is my own personal view. I think the euro is a completely misconstructed currency. And I agree. I think the euro, I don't think the euro is in the long term sustainable either. This is a huge subject for another program. But can I just say, I am very glad that you brought up the coronavirus issue, because, of course, at a time when the coronavirus is spreading, not just in Iran, but apparently elsewhere in the Middle East, that is another very compelling reason why the Europeans and the Greeks do not want to see millions of people from the Middle East flooding into Greece and into the rest of Europe, bringing the coronavirus with them. So they're all of these big issues there, and the coronavirus is a major crisis. And by the way, you're also absolutely right that the Europeans are, again, it's the same chaotic response to the coronavirus that we're seeing to the whole migrant issue. Defending the free movement of people in Europe at precisely the moment when you want to restrict free movement makes no sense.
Not a good idea. All right, from Greg Wilson, a $20 super chat. Please check Anya Parinfil, Red Lines interview of Tehran University professor Mohammed Marandi, who just returned from Syria, analysis and history of Syrian war.
We
mentioned Iran and the role that they play, which is very underreported.
Very underreported, even though it's been absolutely crucial. I mean, Iran was there in Syria before the Russians came, and maybe they didn't have the decisive role that the Russians have, but they had a major role.
They were invited.
They were invited, absolutely. I mean,
many people failed to mention that.
Absolutely. And the Russians have been careful to point this out to Erdogan, that the Russians have a request to be in Syria from the legitimate Syrian government. Turkey doesn't.
Okay, from Mike V, $50 super chat. Thank you, Mike V, very much for that generous super chat. Fighting in Libya, stepping on Greece toes in the East Med over energy, illegally occupying Syria, taking sides in India, also seen in Venezuela with Maduro in 2019, conflicts with Moscow, poor relations with the U.S. Why is foreign policy so messy?
Well, because I think Erdogan.
I want to add on to that from what Mike says as well, because you know we mentioned that Erdogan, when he first got into office, was striving to create friendly neighborly relations. I think that was actually one of his slogans, was to create a friendly neighborly Turkey. What changed?
Well, it's a very good
why
question.
Is it so messy? Like Mike says, why have things gotten so messy?
It's an excellent question. I mean, all I can say is that as Erdogan has become stronger within Turkey, his ambitions to establish Turkey, or as he would say, re-establish Turkey as a great power, seem to have grown. The trouble is, Turkey is not a great power. I mean, it's not a great power in the way that the US, Russia, and China are great powers. It's not a power of the, you know, of the scale that, say, India is. It cannot be at the moment. I mean, it's a completely unrealistic foreign policy. And he doesn't have the expertise to carry out a grandiose foreign policy on this scale, because Turkey doesn't have the strength to do it. So he's improvising. He's doing this all the time. He's looking for, you know, issues that, you know, he can project himself as this great leader, and Turkey as this great power in. But ultimately, it always backfires on him. And as our viewer said, it makes no sense in the end. And it's only annoying people and making Turkey enemies at a time when Turkey needs most of all friends and peace so that he can build up its economy, as it was successfully doing in the first at the beginning of Erdogan's rule. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the coup had an effect on him? That failed.
Yes, I think. Yeah, I think it did. I think two things did. I mean, firstly, I think the Syrian war did, actually. I think that he developed this idea around 2012, 2013, that he could somehow establish within Syria a kind of client regime there. And this made him think that, you know, he could achieve some kind of great geopolitical objective. And I think as that failed, as that became increasingly looked like it would fail, he has somehow tried to compensate for this psychologically, if you like, by being more grandiose in other things. But I think the coup also did have an effect, because of course it was a shock. I don't think he thought that he was vulnerable in that kind of a way. And I think, again, he's tried to compensate by presenting himself as this larger than life figure to the world and to the people of Turkey. It's also important to say that the Turkish military before the coup was a check on him. And after the coup, that check basically went away, because the military no longer is in a position essentially to stand up to him. So all of these things came together. But whatever the cause, and you know what, we don't know the whole inside story, whatever the cause, it's a very, very dangerous foreign policy. And in Turkey's interests, he needs to moderate it and bring it to a stop, because it's not doing Turkey any good. And you know, I agree with, even on subjects where I happen to agree with Erdogan, such as Venezuela. I mean, I don't think the United States should be promoting regime change in Venezuela. Why does Turkey want to be involved in Venezuela? It's the halfway, you know, the other end of the world.
Yeah.
Turkey doesn't have the reach to influence what goes on there. So all he achieves by talking in that way is he annoys Donald Trump.
He angers the U.S.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense.
All right. From Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Erdogan angers U.S., EU, Russia, China, and now he's flaring up with India, with Kashmir.
Yes. Yes. Well, why does he have to be involved in Kashmir? I mean, it doesn't make any kind of sense to me. I mean, I understand there are problems, there are tensions between the Modi government and Muslims, and there's lots of things one could say about Kashmir. But what could Turkey realistically do to change the situation in Kashmir? What can Turkey realistically do with the Uyghurs in China? The Chinese bailed Erdogan out last summer when the Turkish lira was collapsing. Does he really want to anger them by getting into, mixing himself up with China's affairs with the Uyghurs? Does he really want to annoy Modi and the Indian government by mixing himself up with Kashmir?
Does he really want to annoy the Russians and Putin by going to Ukraine and going to Crimea and saying all those things about Crimea and that stuff that he did just, what was it, 2 months ago or a month ago?
Why do that? Why does he have these people who are his political allies in Ankara saying, you know, that Russia can't afford a war with Turkey, because if that happens, you know, all the Sunni people in Russia will rise up against the Russians. They're not going to do that for Turkey. I mean, any idea that, you know, the Tatars or the Chechens will fight for Turkey against the Russians is crazy. But it does upset people in Moscow. So why do it? Why do those things? It doesn't make any kind of sense. It's not realistic. And it doesn't help Turkey. It doesn't achieve anything.
Yeah. Gains him nothing.
Gains him nothing.
From Robert Carr, £2 super chat. Is the coronavirus East Asian specific?
I've just read an article, or rather seen an article, I haven't read it properly, which claims that it is. Now, I don't know. I'm skeptical about those things. I don't know how a disease is specific in that way. But, you know, I'm not an epidemiologist. I need to read these articles and I need to get much more information about it than, you know, before I could comment on a topic like that. And I repeat again, I'm not an expert.
Okay, from Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Erdogan was influenced by Obama, Sarkozy, Cameron and Merkel in Syria.
Yes, absolutely. They fed his ambitions. They made him think, I'm no doubt about this, that, you know, he could achieve great things in Syria. And, you know, as has happened with everybody who put their faith in Obama, I'm sorry to say that, but I will say it, everybody in international affairs who puts their faith in Obama, he was disappointed.
Let's look at those names, Alexander, and Erdogan should take note of those names. Where are they now? Obama, Sarkozy, Cameron, and Merkel. Where are they now?
Where are they now? All of them are gone, and Merkel, except Merkel, she's clinging on and wreaking disaster, wreaking havoc all around her, and she is not supporting Erdogan in this quarrel.
Yeah, from Gary.
At least from Putin, Erdogan gets it straight.
That's right. From Gary Fraser, thanks again from Canada. That's a $20 super chat. Thank you very much, Gary, for that super chat. From Global Citizen, €5 super chat. What's next for Russia after Syria? Patching up the relationship with the EU? Question.
Well, we will see. I think what the Russians always do in these situations is that they make their very strong play and then they wait. And they're very good at waiting. And of course, they don't just wait. I mean, they make their points and they build up their economy and they do those things. But if you want me to say which foreign country is most important to the Russians by far, which issue is Ukraine? I mean, that is the issue that if you talk to ordinary Russians, is the one they care about. Obviously, you know, their great strategic relationship now is with China. They will want to have good relations with Germany also. But ultimately, it is the Ukraine issue that they want to see resolved.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Erdogan wants to be the face of Muslims around the world, including the Middle East, Pakistan, and India.
Yes, indeed. And of course, that he can't, because as a Turkey can't fulfill that role. I mean, the Ottoman Empire once upon a time could. I mean, Turkey doesn't have that position of power that it once did. So it's foolish of Erdogan to think that he can. And of course, by the way, the other thing to say is that, of course, this kind of policy annoys some of the other Sunni states. I mean, the Saudis, who have similar ambitions, you know, to lead the Sunni world, similar, I should say, grandiose ambitions, are antagonized by, and relations between Saudi Arabia and Turkey are now very bad. Another country that has bad relations with Turkey.
Okay, from James Parker, £5 super chat. What do you guys think of Boris Johnson?
I think he's a very, very clever politician. I am not yet convinced he's a very good prime minister. to put it in a word, I mean, he's been very, very clever at both achieving power as becoming prime minister and at getting Brexit done. We've got to say that. I mean, he was the person who did it. No one else was doing it. He actually did it. But as an administrator, as an actual manager, I think, well, I haven't seen anything that inspires me with great confidence up to now. But, you know, Boris is an unusual person. We shall see. By the way, I should say something else. He might not be so bad at foreign policy. And there are the first hints and rumours and murmurings that he's now thinking, apparently, of trying to open up relations with Russia again. Well, we'll see.
We have a video coming out most likely tomorrow on Boris Johnson and Priti Patel. Pronouncing that right, Alexander?
You are indeed. You certainly are.
And that's a big story going on in the UK. So
look out. It certainly is.
All right. Those are all the super chats.
Well, they've been amazing. They've been amazing super chats as always. I have to say, by the way, this isn't something I'm just saying to our viewers now. We say it always often after we've done these super chats, that we are really, really impressed and excited by the depth of knowledge and the insight that many of the questions we get show. In fact, that the questions we get show. I mean, you know, we thank you for your support and, you know, you make it really exciting for us.
We just got another great super chat from Toilet Sauce, €50 super chat.
Wow, well, there you go. Thank you so much.
And the question is, to the person asking about EU-Russia relationship, Europeans always ask why Russia hasn't built a good relationship with Russia. Russians ask why Europeans haven't built a good relationship with them. They have tried to do so for centuries.
Yeah.
Well, is that Russia has been trying for centuries to build a good relationship.
Absolutely. Well, this is entirely right. And I mean, I have to say this straight away. I mean, many Europeans simply don't accept that Russia is a country, a legitimate country with, you know, legitimate interests. And they certainly don't see it as a European country, even though they sometimes talk about it as if it is. The Russians have consistently wanted good relations with the Europeans. They want peace on their Western borders. They've had invasions from the West. They've suffered devastating losses as a result of those invasions. They want peace on their borders so that they can concentrate on their pressing economic and internal development, which is for them their priority. If you spend any time in Russia, you learn that very quickly.
All right. And from Yinka, sent us a $4.99 super chat as well with a thumbs up. Thank you very much, Yinka, for that super chat, for that thumbs up. And we will wrap it up there. Spartan Warrior Queen, thank you once again for everything that you do.
Yes.
We really appreciate it.
We certainly do.
You do a fantastic job. Alexander, that's it.
That's it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this live stream. And if there's any breaking news, we'll get it to you. There's one more super chat that just came in from Mary Antonio Young. Ranked choice voting would have stopped Warren from spoiling Bernie's chance to win Massachusetts and Texas, etc.
I think that's probably true. We will need to discuss all this in great detail.
We should do a video on that, but my standpoint on Bernie has been and remains that he blew it. He had it in 2016.
Yes. Yes.
And he blew it. And I always go from the standpoint, Alexander, that if he was really going to run a revolution in the U.S., he had his chance to create a viable and legitimate third party.
Well, I completely
agree. Progressive Party of America. He could have done it in 2016, and that would have been a revolution if he really wanted that.
Well, indeed. I mean, the point to make is that a nice revolutionary is a contradiction in terms. Either you're going to have a revolution, or you're going to be nice. You can't be both at the same time. And I think that's where Bernie Sanders, who I think is a generally nice man, a likable, decent man, I don't think he's a leader. I don't think he's shown much leadership in this situation. Which isn't to say, by the way, that he hasn't been ganged up on by the Rat Pack of the Democratic Party. But this is a huge subject we need to discuss properly in an in-depth video or perhaps even a live chat. But, in that, I think, we need to go into detail. And perhaps Peter Lavelle, our colleague, who is very much on the ball with in American internal politics will have much to say.
Yeah, it's a big topic, and we'll definitely do either a video or a live stream on that as well.
Yeah.
All right. Alexander Mercuris in London, the Oracle of London. Great analysis, great live show. Thank you very much, Alexander. And to everyone that watched this live stream, thank you very much. Spartan Warrior Queen, thank you very much. Once again, thank you very much. Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise. PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, star.
Indeed, we have just as we're talking about foreign policy. Well, the mug, the magic mug Alex has there has the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation. You'll find it. Erdogan has been eating off plates and mugs and things, which will have that very same badge on it. And of course, this man, who is Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign minister, he was there in that room.
Yes, he was. And Maria Meyer sent us a $2 super chat. Great job, team. Thank you, Maria, for that super chat. We'll leave it there with Maria's last words. Alexander, have a good night. Have a good evening, morning, night to everyone out there, wherever you are. Take care.
Absolutely.